This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's the Now News Panel on AMI. I'm Dave Brown with Michelle McQuigg and Joita Gupta. Let's explore our next topic. Ontario is set to introduce legislation that would require temp agencies and recruiters to be licensed. Labour Minister Monty McNaughton says there are more than 3,000 agencies in the province, and the vast majority operate ethically, but some are bad actors.
Unfortunately, some are lawbreakers who exploit their workers. This needs to change.
He says over the past 2 years, his ministry has focused inspections on temporary help agencies.
The underground activity they found makes millions of dollars off the backs of workers by not paying minimum wage, not paying holiday pay, and not paying overtime pay.
Under the proposed legislation, the agencies and recruiters would need to provide an irrevocable letter of credit that could be used to repay wages owed to workers, if need be, and would be vetted before being issued a license. So guys, at first look, this seems like a fine idea. But Michelle, does it fail to consider the larger systemic issue that companies are using some of these services that exploit workers? Shouldn't the companies who use them be accountable as well?
I think that's such a good and interesting point, Dave, and I would have to say probably yes. There's a lot of the labor industry, especially in Ontario, is a very complex beast. But I do think it's interesting that these new measures have made no mention of the companies that hire these agencies, and we're talking about a lot, not just of agencies, but a lot of employees that they handle, a lot of wages that they help issue. The government found millions of dollars in unpaid wages from these agencies alone. So yes, I do think it's fair for the companies to bear a certain amount of responsibility. And there's also some parallel conversations to be had from this around issues that we've all talked about at some length on this panel, around the overlap with the gig economy, what constitutes a real worker. There are different issues, but there's a lot of overlap, I think, in terms of the kinds of issues and the kinds of struggles that are taking place right now in terms of how companies handle things.
The Toronto Star has done extensive coverage on this issue in regards to some of the workplace violations that individuals who are hired through these temp agencies face in various work environments. And we actually, back before Joita was the host of The Pulse, when I was the host of The Pulse, we actually brought on one of the journalists who was doing some of that work. And really, the conditions they were describing in terms of work hours, in terms of compensation, in terms of working conditions were really, really dreadful. So, Joita, as much as it's important to think about regulating these temp agencies and recruiting companies themselves, how accountable should the companies that use this labor be?
It's a really fascinating question. And for a minute there, I was stumped. I will admit that I almost said, leave the companies out of it, much to my shame. But I have since reconsidered. And I do think that we have to hold the companies accountable, because at the end of the day, companies are going to temp agencies for their labor needs so that they can evade responsibility under the Employment Safety Act, so they can cut down on costs. That's what's happening there. If you're talking about the Fair Foods investigation, the conditions there were horrific. Let's remember that these temporary workers end up as farm workers. They end up in warehouses. They do a lot of really precarious and dangerous work. And we're talking about some of the most vulnerable workers in Ontario. And the level of abuse that they face is absolutely shocking. People, you know, having their passports taken away, having all kinds of being forced to sleep on a straw mat. There's abuse. Just a range of issues going on there. And the other part of this, I don't think we really talked about, is that often companies who lean on temp agencies will turn around and use temporary workers for years at a time. So it's not like, hey, it's Christmas and I need, you know, a couple of other people to stock for the stock room, so I'm going to hire temp workers for a couple of weeks. No, we're talking about people who work in these horrific conditions year after year after year.
And if I can add to that too, in recent during the pandemic, this was another group that bore the brunt of the pandemic. We heard horror stories about agricultural workers who often fall under this category, dying in droves in horrendous isolated conditions, far, far, far from home. So just another way in which this particular group of workers is extra vulnerable. And the companies know this now. There's been so much coverage, as you said, Dave, really excellent work by the Star. Lots of discussion in the COVID era. Which of course is ongoing. So those conditions are not yet put to bed. So there's no way that any company can now claim ignorance on this issue.
Michelle, I want to stay with you for just one moment here because I was a little bit surprised these kinds of companies weren't already regulated. Were you surprised they weren't already under some regulation?
I was extremely surprised. I had no idea that was the case. Now, like I said, I'm not au fait with all the labor ins and outs in this province necessarily, but this was a surprise. So in that sense, I do think it's probably a measure worth applauding in that if there hadn't been action taken yet, at least now there's a start.
Yeah, Juita, the mea culpa is on me that I wasn't familiar with the regulations around these kinds of businesses before. Were you surprised they weren't under some kind of regulation?
No, actually, I wasn't, because when I was in university, I worked with someone called Chris Ramsarup, and Chris was and still is part of a group called Justicia for Migrant Workers. And he was very well informed around the plight of some of these temp workers and migrant farm workers and the horrific conditions that they lived under. So I have known about this issue for a really long time. What I admit to being surprised about, and really maybe this is my naivete talking, what I feel really surprised about is the fact that Doug Ford has suddenly become the champion of temporary workers after his government, when you know it was first elected a couple of years back, abolished legislation that would have allowed equal pay for temporary workers. Now he's really done a 180. So I guess it's just a way to court the immigrant vote maybe in the lead up to a provincial election. But that part of it really took me by surprise.
So guys,
a little context, Michelle, if I may, really quick though. The Ford government has a history of backtracking on a lot of promises in the course of their tenure in government. At one point, we actually had a list going that we called the backtracker, listing all the things that got positions that got reversed. So this is just another one in that sense. So it's not, I don't even necessarily think it reflects a change of heart, maybe just a more enthusiastic approach to early policy and early promises that have since been revisited a bit.
So Juita and Michelle, you guys both identified some of the places where these workers are being exploited, and a lot of them fall under what I would call a sort of critical supply chain, especially in regards to the production, manufacturing, and warehousing of food. And we know how important that is in regards to the general operation of day-to-day living for people. And this is where I get to put on the quote, that guy hat, and talk about record high inflation, which we did see reported by Statistics Canada this week at 4.4%, the highest number since the beginning of the century, really. Since the mid-2000s, we've not seen inflation this high, which is something to consider because we are talking about something in regards to regulation that could have an impact on the supply chain. So, Juita, even though I think we've all acknowledged this is a really good idea, are there any concerns about a disruption to a supply chain that's already fragile?
I don't know if it's really going to cause too many disruptions. As you pointed out, these are a lot of critical issues. It's more, I wonder about whether the prices will go up a little bit more. And I speculate that they will probably go up a little bit, but not significantly so. As a result of paying people, you know, what is a livable wage, something that I can actually really get behind, to be honest with you. This is just, you know, me opining here. You'll forgive me for doing that. But more to the point, you know, if you think back to Henry Ford's idea, he actually paid his workers pretty well because his notion was that if people are paid well, then they can go ahead and buy my cars. So, you know, that's the other piece around this that I think we'll also see people having more disposable income. No, I'm not overly concerned, to be honest with you.
Now with Dave Brown, we'll absolutely support the position of saying we want people to be paid a livable wage. We will take that controversial position as a collection on the show. But Michelle, I do want to kind of circle this back to the supply chain, because if we are talking about the way in which workers are recruited and deployed in the workforce, are there some concerns about a disruption of the supply chain?
I feel like the complexities of supply chain management and evolution are a little bit beyond my grasp to weigh in on, and especially now when so many supply chains are wildly disrupted due to COVID. There's a lot of uncertainty around supply chains on a whole lot of sectors right now. So I'm a little loath to speculate just because I don't necessarily grasp all the implications of what's going to happen. I do share Joita's speculation about what might happen in terms of pricing, and of course supply chain issues would contribute to that. I'm not entirely sure if it's going to mess with supply chains, especially because in Ontario, this law is not expected to take effect until 2024. Mm-hmm. So there might be time to address some of this stuff. Hopefully, all the COVID matters will have worked themselves out by then.
Oh, please.
But there is, right? But no, but there is time to hopefully address some of these issues if there are some that smarter heads than mine can foresee.
So, Michelle, that does lead me into my last thought here in regards to Minister McNaughton saying the legislation would not take effect until 2024. So, Michelle, I'm bouncing the ball right back to you. In the meantime, okay, the provinces are going to be deploying more inspectors. At this point, should violators face a zero-tolerance policy, a crackdown before licensing, if you will?
Yeah, I'm always opposed to ramping up inspection without ramping up enforcement in a corresponding way. So if there's going to be more people with their eyes on this particular issue and more people deployed on the ground to tackle it, I do think there need to be some stiffer consequences. So a zero tolerance approach like the one you're suggesting, Dave, wouldn't shock me and probably wouldn't go amiss.
Yeah, if you're clawing back wages against the law, your license as a business should be taken away, point final. Very similar to how bars are losing their liquor licenses for not supporting COVID-19 public health protocols. Joita, you get last word on this one. Should there be a zero tolerance policy for violators in the meantime between the licensing and regulation of these businesses?
I want to say yes, but remember, right now, this isn't the law, so there's nothing to enforce, and there are no licenses to be revoked. That'll all come in 2024. The more interesting question almost for me is, why are they waiting till 2024? Why? They know that this is a problem. Why didn't they act on this yesterday? But, you know, certainly 2024 seems quite a ways off in the future. Now, Minister McNaughton is saying that there will be a lot of inspectors deployed, that if you are caught in violation of the law such as it is right now, you will face jail time and heavy fines. So it looks like they're serious about it. But really, the 2024 deadline is quite frankly baffling to me.
Yeah.
And 2 years past the next provincial election when this government might not even be in power anymore.
Also a fair point, and that's one that we talked about earlier this week in regards to the campaign ads already running in Ontario, which is baffling and a little bit disheartening. Thank you for visiting this issue with me, guys. Coming up next, Newfoundland and Labrador will be introducing a tax on sugary drinks. We'll break down the granular details. This is the Now News Panel on AMI. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.